Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring Giants players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Giants third baseman Matt Duffy joins us each homestand.
I think when I'm going best is when I'm just staying short, trying to hit the ball right back up the middle and seeing it well.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Toscalito Tire and Automotive, with four Marin locations, plus the marina in San Francisco and Vallejo. Toscalito, more than just a tire store. Today's guest is San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea. Let's talk about a former Giant who was on the mound and getting a lot of congratulations and a lot of cheering and support in Oakland, and that's Tim Lincecum pitching for the Angels. And he went six strong innings, didn't have a lot of strikeouts, just had a couple, but he was really good, and looks like the Angels made a good move to bring him on, although it's just one start, and it was against the A's, a team that's, you know, not one of the best teams around. What did you think of Lincecum? And I don't think this surprises you, because you're the one who said there were, 10 reasons why he was going to succeed.
Yeah, I wrote all about his mechanics are back, his health is back, his confidence is back, you know, his stuff being not what it was, but close enough, and you know, more than anything, he's got the incentive to kind of recreate himself, and that's kind of what he's doing in a perfect situation. I mean, Socha, good manager for pitchers, and the fact that right away Benji Molina was there with him in Arizona, and his last rehab game was seven scoreless, one hit. And he kind of carried that into Oakland. Six innings, one run, four hits, two walks. And I was talking to him the night before that first start, and he talked all about no longer being limited with his hip or his core. He felt good about his mechanics again. And, you know, he talked about sharper breaking pitches and consistent 88 to, well, he said 88 to 92 with his fastball. It was more like 88 to 91 or 88 to 90. But more than that, better command. You know, he talks about, well, I'm not a velo guy anymore. And more than all that, I mean, his confidence to get hitters out, and he admitted he'll never be that 94 to 96 guy, and he's not. But he did well enough, and he kind of stymied the A's for six innings, and maybe lucky for him, he faces the A's once more in Anaheim, his next start. And he said after his start that a lot of Giants fans and even A's fans who supported him in this game kind of made it feel like home to him again. So, and by the way, the A's probably could use him right now, but didn't think the $2.5 million investment was the right thing to do at the time. At the time, they had a lot of young guys, but a lot of these young guys are either hurt or in the minor leagues. So they're kind of being held together by a string in that rotation. And the Giants, could they have used him? Well, that whole thing is, well, as a reliever, and that was never going to happen. He was never going to go to the Giants if he was going to be. I mean, that would really mess him up. I don't know when I'm going to pitch. I don't know to what extent, what role. I mean, he was not getting back into the game to be a long reliever with the Giants. So. The Giants couldn't promise him anything in the rotation. The Angels could, perfect fit, and it's going to be a great story moving forward. The Angels aren't going anywhere, but Lincecum is given the opportunity to kind of revamp his career and go back to free agency after the season.
Yeah, I give him credit for sticking to his guns about being a starter. He didn't want to be the next Yusmeiro Petit, I guess, for the Giants. You know, he was a Cy Young Award winner. He still feels like he has it. You know, he understands. I mean, he knows and admits that he doesn't have the same stuff like you were talking about. But I do give him credit for that, because some guys might have just taken that Giants deal knowing the Giants are going to be in contention. You might be able to go after another ring. But, you know, he just sees that he's got that ability to still be a starter. I'm not sure. You know, we're going to have to see if that was the right call for him just in the long term, because I still think he would have been a good relief pitcher, don't you think?
No, I don't know. I kind of doubt it. He's I mean, with Zito, I mean, these guys love their routines.
Yeah.
I mean, Lincecum was a great reliever in the postseason in 12, but that was kind of a short-term basis. He didn't do it all year. He had the pitch count up to where he could throw one inning or five innings. It didn't matter. And the situation called for him to be reliever at that time, and maybe without him, they don't win that second World Series. I mean, he was dynamite. I mean, it was just kind of a new thing. Hey, is this going to be a trend in baseball, a starter turn reliever who can pitch anywhere, anytime, and give you a bunch of innings or just one or one batter, whatever. And that was him. And from there, though, his career slipped quite a bit, and now we're at the point where his hip is not an issue anymore, his mechanics are not an issue anymore, and his confidence is soaring, and that's sort of where he's at right now.
More with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
You have to admit, collecting World Series titles is a new trend for the Giants, but at Toscalito Tire and Automotive, they've been winning since 1971 with quality tires and reliable auto and light truck repair at 6 Bay Area locations near you. Toscalito Tire and Automotive will take care of you like family, and they offer a nationwide warranty backed by the strength of the Goodyear Tire and Service Network. And unlike watching close Giants games, going to Toscalito equals a stress-free life. No torture at Toscalito Tire and Automotive. With 4 Marin locations, plus the Marina in San Francisco and Vallejo, Toscalito, more than just a tire store.
Now, one of the all-time greats in baseball history is Ichiro, and there's a little bit of controversy going on because he passed Pete Rose as far as combined hits in Japan and in Major League Baseball. Pete Rose coming out and saying something like, what are they going to do next, count his high school hits, which was the wrong thing to say.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that Ichiro passed him as far as that number, and I definitely agree with, you wrote a story about this, a nice long column about the whole situation. You talked to Hensley Mullins, the Giants hitting coach who played with Ichiro a long time ago, and I like what he said. I mean, I like how he said it. You know, basically it's two different records, and you have to appreciate what he did in Japan, and who knows, he might have been able to break Rose's record if he played in the major leagues the whole time. There has to be an appreciation for what Ichiro did.
Yeah, why can't Pete Rose ever take the high road?
He doesn't do it. Yeah. He won't.
In this case, it's everybody knows he's the hit king. Nobody says that Ichiro broke the record. If you did, you're just trying to get ratings, or
right,
you just started following the game yesterday, or you just want to be a contrarian.
Right.
No, nobody who has any kind of common sense or baseball history or knows something or two will say that, yeah, the record fell. It's Ichiro's. I mean, it's a big deal in Japan, but I think even there they honor the fact that Rose has the record here, and Ichiro did it in two leagues, and that Japan baseball isn't the same as baseball here. But that brings us to the other question, something that I believe as well. If Ichiro did play his entire career here, would he have challenged Rose's record? And I would say absolutely. It's not like he just feasted on bad pitching in Japan. It's that he was that good to do that well there. And I asked Mullins, I said, well, do you measure the competition or do you measure the man? And he says, I measure the man. And that says it all, because he thinks that Ichiro would have challenged or even broken the record if he started here at age 20. And remember, they only play 144 games in Japan, 162 here. He never played more than 130, 135 in Japan. So we're talking a whole season's worth of games maybe over the time that he missed, or maybe, you know, up to 100 or whatever it is. There's a lot more games that he would have played here. He came here, hit 200 hits every year for 10 years, which nobody ever did in his first 10 seasons. So you got to think that before he got here, he was pretty good, and he would have done the exact same thing in the 7 seasons that he did miss. I mean, he played when he was 18, 19, but those 2 years he didn't play many games. He really got into it when he was 20, and that's the year that Hensley Mullins remembers. It was 1994, and Ichiro was a 20-year-old, and he just came in, and Mullins remembers this this rocket arm and a guy who could steal a base anytime he wanted and put on big shows and batting practice. His second full season, he had 25 homers. And it was just amazing. There wasn't anything he couldn't do on the baseball field. And for that reason, you know, he says, and I tend to agree, that if he were here his entire career, maybe Rose wouldn't have the record anymore. But he certainly has it now.
I think I said it wrong. I think they played against each other, right? They didn't play together.
Yeah.
But there was a funny anecdote in there that you had about how, you know, Ichiro was learning English, all the bad words, I guess, when he was in Japan. He really did want to play in the major leagues in the U.S. Even at that time, you could tell. But he was really trying hard to communicate with the players from the U.S.
Yeah, as Mulan said, he always went up to the foreign players, meaning the former big leaguers, and talked to them about life in the States and life in the big leagues. And even at that young age, he had envisioned playing in the big leagues. So this was all kind of calculated at an early age. He was that good and that confident.
Let's talk about Sergio Romo. He's trying to work his way back to the Giants. He only made 4 appearances early in the season, and then his elbow was barking. And he tried to go on a rehab assignment. That didn't work out. They had to start him up again. He had a setback. And I just saw him in San Jose over the weekend. He worked 2 out of 3 games, struck out Yasiel Puig. That was pretty cool. His slider looked pretty good, and he looks like he's healthy. And to work a game and then take a day off and then work again, seems like he's at least passing that test. What does he mean to the Giants bullpen? I mean, how important is it to have him in there, seeing what you've been able to see out of the pen without Romo lately?
Well, I got a bigger question for you. Did you take advantage of the half-price beer?
Well, when Puig struck out, I mean, he was the beer batter, so, you know, then you get free beer.
Oh, free beer. Okay. I thought it was only half price.
I think at that point, you know what? I couldn't. I was on the air. I'm not allowed to drink.
Come on. Okay. But
I do, as a little aside, Puig was very strange to watch. He actually, get this one, he let a ball drop in right field that was off the bat of Daniel Carbonell, his countryman from Cuba. We couldn't figure out why he did it. The only thing I could think of was that he wanted Carbonell to up his batting average. But then he proceeded to gun him out at second on the same play. So it was very strange. I mean, I don't think he was taking it very seriously being there. But it seemed like Romo was. I mean, he was taking it seriously. In fact, I got to tell you this, another little anecdote, is that Ty Ross, the catcher in San Jose, he said he was putting down signs for Romo. He was shaking them off, yet he still wanted to throw the pitch that he originally was putting down as a sign. He was trying to throw off the hitters. I mean, Puig, he was trying to do that. I don't know if he does that in the major leagues, but it was kind of funny, you know, that Ross was experiencing that as the catcher, that got a guy shaking you off, but he really does want to throw the pitches that you're putting down.
That's funny, because it's not like he's got a whole selection of pitches, right?
No. Yeah, it's like, how hard is it to say, okay, slider, slider, slider. Oh, yeah, fastball every
slider,
once in a while.
Shake to the slider, shake to the slider.
Right.
Yeah, out since April 11th with the elbow problem, he's a big guy in this bullpen, and Casillas kind of been all alone. Remember, Bochy has a history of, well, if one guy doesn't succeed, I can always slip the other guy in there, and maybe he takes over the job for a spell. But that's never been an option this year, because nobody else in the bullpen is capable of being a closer for any extended stay other than the guy who has the role now. So with Romo back, and like I said, it's been more than 2 months he's been out, he'll be motivated. Remember, this is a walk year for him, like it is for the 3 remaining guys of the core 4, Lopez and Casilla. Mm-hmm. All can be free agents after the season and can join Affeldt, who retired, as ex-Giants. So they all have something to pitch for the first time simultaneously. They're all getting up there in age, and you know, maybe this is the end of that run. So Romo has a lot to prove if he wants a big contract after the season, and maybe just to himself and the team that, you know, he can finish strong. And more than that, the Giants really need him, because the experience in the back end of the bullpen isn't what it has been over the championship run. So Romo and Casilla, that would make a big difference together, the tag team.
The one thing I look at with Romo from last year, the number that just jumps out at me, is that lefties hit something like 370 against him, and that's not the case earlier in his career. And I noticed that on Sunday he gave up a base hit to a left-handed batter, and yeah, it's on rehab in the Cal League, but he wasn't happy with himself. He just turned and said, oh, you know, because that's really something he needs to work on to get back to, where he was fairly effective against left-handed batters. I mean, he would throw that two-seamer away, or it was the backdoor slider, but somehow last year those sliders were leaking over the plate and those left-handed batters were crushing him.
I think we've all asked why Bochy is leaving him in against this guy, and then we watch the ball leave the ballpark. That's another example of Bochy having faith in guys whose numbers don't suggest he should have faith in guys. He always looks at the good side of a player because he once did this in the clutch in a big time. And, you know, that's just Bochy. Who knows what we're going to get because, you know, April was a while back. Last year was a while back. We'll see if Romo's any different. I'm sure Bochy will test him to see if he can get left-handers out.
More with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this.
Hey, how'd you get those cool new shirts for the trade show so fast?
Access!
Who makes all that great clothing for high schools and colleges?
Access!
How do I get my company logo embroidered on some nice polo shirts?
Access!
Access Uniforms is your go-to resource for customized clothing. Just call us to find the right product, email your artwork, and your order will be on its way directly from our factory right here in Burlingame. Call Access Uniforms at 877-755-LOGO. That's 877-755-L-O-G-O.
Now, throughout the season, we've been talking about the new sliding rule at second base, and I got a little bit of a different take on it when I talked to Will Clark during the last homestand, John. Mm-hmm. Here is what he had to say about the state of baseball and sliding into second base.
You know what? The way that they're putting the rules in baseball now, they're taking all the contact out of the sport, and they're babyfying the sport. It really is. It's really bad to see. You know, not only from a, you know, sliding into second base, but also sliding into home plate. You know what I mean? You know, I understand what the salaries these guys are making. They got to protect the players and all that. But they've really babyfied the sport, and I don't think it's good for the sport at all. Nowadays, I mean, if you're not anywhere, like, right on top of the bag, it's an automatic double play. And, you know, that if you're not allowed to at least make a little contact and disrupt the double play, well, what's the reason in me running down here to second base then?
So, Clark, he doesn't like these new rules. He's come up with his own term, babyfying. I never heard of that word before. And I tend to agree with him a little bit. I do miss the old school part of it. In fact, I did dial up an old video of Will. We did talk about this during the podcast where he slid into second base and took out Ozzie Smith, and it turned into a brawl. And it was really him trying to answer, I guess there was some kind of beanball incident the day before. So that was the way you got back at a player or a team. And you can't even do that anymore. So, you know, what do you think, John? I mean, when you hear old school players talking like this, do they have to maybe just adjust to the way things are now and not complain about it?
Yeah,
or what do you think?
The Buster Posey rule, that seems to work out okay. There was some initial back and forth about it. But this Chase Utley rule is lot different because there are many more angles to it. When Utley slid into Tejada last October, I mean, obviously that was blatant. And if it's blatant, you call it. But now we got this rule, you know, the whole neighborhood thing. If somebody, we're counting everything, and everything's on camera, and everything's being reviewed, and it's slow, it's boring, it's not exciting. So if a guy slides 2 inches past the bag on a hard slide, because he got there quickly, right? There's no such thing as a soft slide if he got there quick. And only the camera in a three-minute delay can determine whether he's out or safe. I mean, that's kind of silly. That kind of takes away from the game. Now all the infielders are taught to leave the glove on the foot because the foot might leave the bag for only a split second.
Right.
Yeah, that's babyfying the game, as Clark said. But I think that might be going a little bit overboard. I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm thinking just let them play. I mean, there are too many rules now, too many restrictions. It takes away from them just playing the ball free and easy like they did as kids. You know, now they have to replay everything. But, you know, contact is okay. Getting the uniform dirty is okay. And, you know, like Clark says, I mean, they're going to look at this and they're going to have to tone it down, I think, with these replays, because there's just too many of them, and it's not just the replays. And we hear in the press box, oh, that was a minute 40. Well, it's not a minute 40. You have 20 seconds where the manager steps out of the dugout and turns around and looks at his bench coach, And then you have another 20 seconds for the umpires to run in and put the silly headphones on.
Right.
And so meanwhile the fans are just sitting there doing nothing, and it's just weird. And I think there's a way to maybe limit this and to quicken this.
I agree. And I don't like how long it takes. Here's another part of it too that I hadn't really thought about before talking to Will Clark about this, is that it's mostly about breaking up the double play, but I also started to think about, how does a hitter get back at a pitcher for throwing at him, other than charging the mound and starting a brawl that way? It used to be that was it. Like, you got hit by a pitch, now you're going in hard to second. Sorry, shortstop or second baseman, but I'm going in hard because I just got hit by a pitch, and that was kind of your retaliation. Now you don't have that anymore, It's taken away.
You're right, and I mean, I hear from both Brandon Crawford and Joe Panik that they don't like this new rule. They would rather have the guy maybe slide off kilter a little bit than being forced, like I said, there's no more neighborhood play, being forced to have your foot on the bag that extra second, because that could create injuries. You're more susceptible to the hard slide because you got to stay on the base now to make sure that it's just not you catch the ball and then you slide your foot, or you slide your foot then you catch the ball, whatever. Now you have to have possession of the ball with your foot on the bag, which is the way the rule has always been, but now they're calling it, they're not allowing the neighborhood play anymore. So you would think that over time these middle infielders would be susceptible to more injuries, not fewer. And that's where I think the issue is, and that's what they're seriously going to have to look at. But hey, I remember back in the day, and Steve Garvey, say all you want about this guy, maybe he wasn't a great teammate, maybe he was a little phony, but I always voted for this guy for the Hall of Fame. And one thing he always did, and I can't prove this with any numbers or anything, but just covering the Padres and the Dodgers in those years, every time he would be knocked down, I guarantee you the very next pitch was a line drive up the middle, like right over the pitcher's head. And it was unbelievable. I'd never seen anyone do that before. How can you do that? But it seemed like he was determined and he was good enough to make that happen. It was unbelievable.
That's the answer right there, if you're going to get back at somebody. Well, John, thanks so much. By the way, now that there's no more NBA Finals or Stanley Cup Final, no more Sharks and Warriors, it's all baseball now. So that's all we can think about.
Well, it's opening day. Today's the first day of the baseball season, and I think people start coming out. All these columnists who haven't seen a baseball game all year, we might, we won't have nearly as much room in the press box, and that's a bad thing, right? No, I mean, it is weird that both the Sharks and the Warriors have gone this long, and, the baseball season, the baseball stories are back on, page 4 or 5, and the good thing is eventually they'll be on the front here in the next few days, so that's not a bad thing, and so a lot more attention will be given. I mean, who knows, the Giants have won, 28 out of 35, 27 out of 35, when you're following these Warriors so closely.
Thanks, John.
Thanks.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Join us again Friday. We'll be at AT&T Park in San Francisco as the Giants take on the Philadelphia Phillies. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.